go to JJ Courtney, Show Africa correspondent. We're going to go to Togo, Burkina Faso. We are going to go to Sudan as well. Our Africa correspondent, JJ Cornish. Bonjour, monsieur.
Bonjour to you, Clarence. Nice to be chatting, man.
Always nice to be chatting. And with so much happening in the world, we're not concentrating on important matters back home. And that's why this conversation is absolutely important. So elections in Togo, once listed as the unhappiest country in the world, it no longer apparently has this unenviable title. But President Faure Gnassingbe's clutch on power is hardly designed to make it happy. Foreign journalists are not getting a look at today's polling. What's going down?
Well, Togo is one of the 64 countries that having polls this year. 64 countries, an unprecedented number. We could talk about nothing but elections every time we get on the line together. Faure Gnassingbe has been in power for 19 years, but his daddy before him, Gnassingbe Eyadema, he was in power for no less than 38 years. So that's the longest family hold on power in Africa and probably in the world. Now, they got independence from France in 1960, but the Gnassingbes have been there since 1967. Togolese parliament has passed a regulation that will in future make them, the parliament, choose the president. So it will be a parliamentary a presidency, not won by popular vote, as is the case in most countries. Well, it's rather like our country. And I do know that there was a very senior academic and researcher attached to the Botswana University for years and years, you know, one of those ideologues, in fact, an Australian, who came over and spent years there, that made his life there. And in one article, he was saying, this is not really democracy. You know, you should have a democratic vote for the president and a separate democratic vote for parliament, and not to have that undermines democracy. At which point the Botswana said, pack your bag, mates, you're out. And after many years, this guy was persona non grata. So very interesting, you know, are we a genuine democracy, not actually voting for our president, but letting the ruling party choose it? I don't know.
I'm feeling with that Australian, it's a counterbalance that you can achieve between president and parliament.
Well, I hope you've got a bag pack, mate.
Ah! I got nowhere to go.
What do you think? What do you think? I think it's a very, very interesting debate, and I think it's a very healthy debate.
Absolutely.
We should be talking about things like this, shouldn't we? Yeah. I have no doubt that we have a genuine democracy in this country, but, you know, can one democracy be better than others? You know, who was it? Winston Churchill said democracy, you know, it's the worst kind of government, but compared to all others, you know, it's slightly better. Sort of, maybe he had a better quote than I did just now. But anyway, very interesting.
So we have look at South Africa. He's absolutely right. Democracy is the worst kind of government.
Units.
Yeah. And maybe just if the president wasn't decided in parliament, but by us, you know, that tactical vote could be hugely beneficial to our democracy.
I think so. I go with you on this. I think we would have a better democracy if we had a popular vote for the president. I do believe that.
Okay. Anyway, hopefully we won't be sent packing. Are we going to move? Are we going to move on to Burkina Faso? Expelling the BBC, Voice of America, Deutsche Welle, The Guardian, a lot of Western press, told to pack and move.
Swiss, French, Le Monde, all others. Basically, they said that the Burkina Faso forces were responsible for the killing of 223 people, including 56 children in February. And they were, quote, collaborating with the rebels. There's an inquiry into this, and the Burkinabe are saying, you know, we've got an inquiry into this, but all these people are saying, hey, we should, they've pronounced their verdict already. This is absolutely not fair. So it's kicked them out. The Ouagadougou authorities, or the junta there, you know, there were two coups in Burkina Faso recently. They thought that they could get at the jihadis, and they've actually turned their back on France and Western powers. and turned to Russia, who hasn't really managed to do much as a, quote, strategic ally. But last year, Clarence, sad to say, 8,000 people were killed in attacks by the jihadis. And, you know, that was the year of the junta, of the coup. So that hasn't brought them stability, and that's what they were hoping for. And certainly the people supporting the coup did so in the belief that it would bring them stability, but it hasn't.
Chez, we're going to just go back to the Togo. There's a question in from Jill. Jill writes, yes. The question for JJ Reed Togo, I thought that Obiang of Equatorial Guinea was the longest running head of state. Terrible, of course, that Togo is a competitor.
Well, I think Obiang, who killed his uncle to become president, he was there for, or is he there still? But I'm talking about the father and son together. It's something like, oh, it's nearly 60 years, isn't it? It's more than 50, well over 50 years. So that's certainly, Obiang can't beat that one. But he was indeed, Jill's right, he was the longest serving president as it is, you know, as he stands.
Thank you, Jill, keeping us honest. Now, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, warning of genocide in Sudan. You had warned of the possibility of this long before the UN Secretary General has. Please bring us up to speed.
Well, you know, I've been there to Al-Fashir in Darfur, the northern capital. I nearly got shot there. I was walking through the darkness, and I put my head torch on to try and get through the darkness to go to lunch, to dinner with the local governor. And I heard several rifles being cocked and a voice. I couldn't make out what he said. And so I fell to the ground, and the soldiers came up. They realized what it was. It was just a journalist hoping for a free drink and a free meal. But that was at a very, very, very tough time. And I've been there three times, and not every time do they let me get out and go and see the people. But in this case, the rapid support forces are rounding on the 800,000 people who live in Al-Fashir, and many of them are refugees from Nyala, which is the southern capital. They are hiding out there. That has been taken by the RSF. There is a genuine fear there of a genocide. The Americans said, there was a Security Council meeting on Sudan last night, and there was a call on the United Arab Emirates to stop supplying weapons to the rapid support forces. You know, there's been this year-long war, the greatest displacement of human beings in history thus far. The year-long war between the army, the normal forces, and this special group called the rapid support forces. They were the Janjaweed at one point, you know, the wild horsemen. So we really do hope. And what is happening, of course, in countries like in Gaza and in Ukraine sometimes eclipses the horrors of what is happening in Sudan. But if they can somehow stop the RSF from moving in or trying to take Al-Fashir, the last of the big cities that it needs to take to have complete control of Darfur, that would be to the good.
And yeah, genocide is just an ugly word that is making its presence felt far too much in 2024. Thank you, JJ Cornish, Africa correspondent. Important stuff happening around the continent, and our opportunity to familiarize ourselves with the pushes and the pulls just after 10 o'clock every Tuesday.
Monday to Friday,
from 9 a.m.
This is Views and News with Clarence Ford.
Only on Cape Talk.
Yeah, it is 10:19, nearly 20 past 10. And that WhatsApp number, 0725671567. Your calls anytime, 021-446-0567. We're going to talk digital nomads. South Africa's imminent rollout of a digital nomad visa is interesting. There's a blend of excitement and concern brewing among tech enthusiasts. Now, the innovative visa initiative, featuring both remote working and critical skills categories, aims to position our country as a global hub for digital nomads and skilled professionals alike. People have sung its praises. There are also drawbacks. Digital nomads earn higher salaries and drive up living expenses in city centers like Johannesburg and Cape Town. This results in higher rents and food costs, pushing locals to move to the outskirts and spend hours in traffic to get to their place of work. Because of this decrease in quality of life, lucrative opportunities abroad, and even just working remotely for an international company lure many skilled coders. And this leads to a depletion of our pool of talented coders as local businesses find it hard to match the salary packages offered by